Hello, this is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First Radio Show. We have some great guests on for you today. In the first half, we're going to be speaking with Marilyn Preston. She's the author of All Is Well, The Art and Science of Well-Being. And in the second half, we're going to speak to author Roland Griffith, and his book is Finding Peace, One Pop at a Time. But first here, we're going to have the Health First News with Alan.
Instead of getting a flu shot at the doctor's office, you might someday inhale a nasal spray vaccine at home. That's the goal of researchers who say a genetically engineered flu vaccine shows promise in animal research and may ultimately lead to better influenza protection. Although further work is needed, the scientists hope their approach will lead to an effective at-home vaccine. Study senior author Ren Sun said because the variations of seasonal influenza viruses can be unpredictable, current vaccines may not provide effective protection against them. He's a professor of molecular and medical pharmacology at the University of California, Los Angeles' David Geffen School of Medicine. Using cutting-edge genomics, the researchers said they identified and removed the flu virus's defense mechanisms. The experimental vaccine triggered a strong immune response in animals. The study was published January 18th in the journal Science. In an early step toward one-stop screening for cancer, researchers report they developed a blood test that can detect 8 types of the disease. The blood test is dubbed CancerSeek. It was able to catch cancer cases anywhere from 33 to 98% of the time, depending on the type. The accuracy range was better, 69 to 98%, when it came to 5 cancers that currently have no widely used screening test, the scientists reported in a new study. Those cancers included ovarian, pancreatic, stomach, liver, and esophageal cancers. The researchers said the findings are an exciting initial step. The hope is to eventually have a single blood test that can screen people for a range of common cancers. The findings are published in the January 19th issue of Science. Head impacts, not just concussions, may lead to the degenerative brain disease called chronic traumatic encephalopathy, according to new research. The findings could lead to early detection and improved treatment and prevention of CTE, the researchers suggested. More than 100 National Football League players have been posthumously identified as having CTE. They include former New England Patriots tight end Aaron Hernandez, who died by suicide in 2017 at the age of 27 while serving a life sentence for murder. Medical experts later said his condition was the most severe case of CTE ever discovered in someone his age and would have affected his decision-making, judgment, and cognitive abilities. To learn more, investigators examined brains from teens who had sustained impact head injuries up to 128 days before they died. The researchers also used mice to simulate sports and blast-related head injuries and worked with computer models. The report was published online January 18th in the journal Brain. Chowing down on red meat, white bread, and sugar-laden drinks might increase your long-term risk of colon cancer, a new study suggests. These foods all increase inflammation in your body, and the inflammation they cause is associated with a higher chance of developing colon cancer, according to pooled data from 2 major health studies. Basically, what makes for a healthy diet overall also appears to promote a cancer-free colon, said senior researcher Dr. Edward Giovannucci. He's a professor of nutrition and epidemiology at Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health in Boston. It's consistent with what we already recommend for a healthy diet in general, Giovannucci said. We're supporting the current evidence and not telling people to do something completely different from what they've been told. The study was published online January 18th in the journal JAMA Oncology.
Marilyn Preston is a journalist, a healthy lifestyle expert. She's an Emmy-winning TV producer, and she's the author of The Energy Express, America's longest-running syndicated sports column. She also has a healthy lifestyle, from eating clean to going green, from losing weight to adding muscle. She's written about all of it, and she's active in it. So she's also been writing about healthy lifestyles that include yoga, walking, kayaking, wine tasting, and adventuring. It's just full gamut. So her latest book is All Is Well, Creating Your Own Healthiest, Happiest Life. So welcome, Marilyn.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
It's so good to have you on the show. You've written quite a few books, but All Is Well is your latest book.
Yes, and the subtitle actually is The Art and Science of Personal Well-Being, Kathy, which I think is the niche of the book. It's really not a book about fitness per se, or how much you weigh, or how many times you get to the gym. But personal well-being, I think, is much deeper than that, much more personal.
Mm-hmm. So you've been in this industry over 40 years. What are some of the things that have stayed constant through all this?
I think confusion, I think, among listeners to your show today and readers of mine in newspaper over 40 years. People are so confused mm-hmm. about what foods to eat, what foods not to eat, about how much exercise they need. So many, they're either purposely misled or they're just confused by contradictory information. For instance, a great example is, do you remember when everyone was advised to don't eat fat or you'll get fat? So people shifted to non-fat kind of fake foods with a lot of sugar in them. Well, now we know that was terrible advice. That there are healthy fats that your body needs, and they help regulate your metabolism, whereas a lot of fake foods screw up your metabolism. So I think one of the things I've noticed consistently is the confusion persists. I think it's one of the reasons I wrote the book.
Mm-hmm. And do you go anywhere in the book with foods and put a realistic expectation on foods?
Oh, I talk quite a bit about foods because people are so are concerned about it, and as I say, confused about it. And very often, if they turn to their doctor for some help or some clarity, well, certainly in the United States, Western trained doctors get practically no education in nutrition. I think when I started the column, this column in 76, maybe they had 6 hours over 4 years at best. Now, maybe a few places might have increased to 10 hours. But basically, Western-trained doctors, and I'd love to know if you agree, are really not trained in the effect of food on your health and how you feel, or the effect of food on healing. So I talk quite a bit about it. And, of course, I love what a writer named Michael Pollan has suggested in his many books, which is very simple. Eat real food, mostly plants, not too much. So that's one way to go.
You don't have to write a whole book. That sounds pretty good.
There's been some very interesting research lately looking overall at the fact that, you know, we've had a billion-dollar diet industry for years and years, and not only has it not helped people lose weight, but it's actually contributed to the tremendous obesity problem. So there was a guy named Len Kravitz. He's an exercise researcher. He looked at a lot of contemporary research, and his conclusion is so interesting about why diets don't work and what to do. So why diets don't work is because they're very punitive and strict, and people really can't keep up that kind of regimen very long. The body just doesn't like to do what it doesn't enjoy. So once we get off the diet, not only do we gain all the weight back, but we add a few pounds. And it adds to a kind of low self-esteem. Self-esteem is though, oh, we failed. You know, I've tried to lose this weight, and I fail, and I fail again. And that, too, can set you up for overeating. So the latest research I've seen that I kind of think is encouraging to people who've struggled with their weight. Start where you are and just cut back and create some substitutions that you like. For instance, do you like having burgers? Just have it without the bun. Or eat a sandwich on one piece of bread. Or substitute orange juice, which is high in sugar, with a cup of cantaloupe or berries, which is sugar, but a perfectly acceptable kind of sugar that comes in fruits. Mm-hmm. So there are lots of little tips and things, but I think it's encouraging to tell people, just start where you are and think of creative ways to cut back. Does that make sense to you?
That makes a whole lot of sense. Very simple. It's not hard to remember. And in your book, you talk about the blue zones and what we can learn from them. Can you talk a little bit about those kind of lives?
Oh, yes. Blue zones, very, very interesting. First of all, there is a Blue Zones website, bluezones.com, and it reflects the work of Dan Buettner. He's written books before, and his Blue Zone research is fascinating. His team of impeccable researchers isolated about 7 places around the globe, around the world, where people live extraordinarily long and vibrant lives well into their 90s, even their hundreds, and no dementia, which is fascinating. So they looked at these seven areas. One is in Japan, one is in China, there's one in Greece, there's one in the United States, seven different places. And they looked for, so what is in common? What are the things in common in the blue zones? So this is where it gets interesting, because this is where it helps people make choices that would contribute to their own longevity and well-being. Okay, so what are the things? Well, one is what you would expect. They eat real food. You know, a lot of people are growing their own food. Mm-hmm. Another is that people in the blue zones wake up with a purpose in life, whether it be take care of their grandchildren, take care of the goats, whatever it is, they feel, okay, I've got a role to play today. It's very important. Of course, exercise you would expect, but they don't go to gyms, these long-lived people with no dementia. They just work movement into their everyday life. Many of them are in places where it just requires them to walk to the village or walk to town. Anyway, they get movement into their day without having to run to a gym. And then there are a couple of surprising things. I hope your listeners will take this on board, because they may not have heard this research. It turns out that human interaction taking is very, very important to longevity and well-being. Taking time in your day, not to talk to your Facebook friends, let's say, but to real friends, participating in a real community activity. And just whether that human encounter be with the person at the post office or the person who's packing your groceries, hopefully it would be a cup of coffee or a glass of wine, something where you are sharing your story and listening to others. It's a big contributor, and it's something that people can do if they knew how important it is.
So it's much more important than being thin or buffed to actually have those connections and have a community.
Yes, absolutely. And not having it, which I think I hear since the book is out, and I've been traveling some. So many people complain about how much distraction they have in their life, how the technology is kind of ruining human interaction, and people are addicted to it. And the truth is that not having these kinds of human encounters in our day is as much as a health risk as smoking and obesity. Hmm. That's interesting. Smoking and obesity, which people struggle with. So if you can't do that, you can do the other. Call a friend. Go have a conversation.
So that's one of the best things for our mental health is the community connection and the conversation.
Absolutely, yes. Being part of a community has been shown, and I think this goes back to this idea of confusion. I think people get confused that what's the most important thing is the numbers on the scale, or how much body fat they have, or their cholesterol numbers, and it's just a burden of misunderstanding. Whereas if they could connect to other people in their community, find some activities they enjoy, cut back on foods they enjoy, but still find pleasure in eating instead of drama and denial, these are tremendous boosts to well-being and health in general.
Interesting. In your book, too, you ask why sensing your sacrum is more important than running a marathon. What is this about sensing your sacrum? Your sacrum's that bony, flat part at the base of your spine.
Yes, I think it's been one of my big discoveries since I've been writing this column for all these years. Because no one talks to you about this. I kind of found my way to this because I have a lot of interest, early interest in the mind-body connection, and really fell in love with yoga many years ago. So this is what I mean by sensing your sacrum is more important than running a marathon. Okay, so we grow up knowing that it's so important to exercise, and what often people think of are the big sports, the big movements, swimming and tennis or running or walking and moving your body with these in these what I call big movement sports. But what turns out to be just as important and more important for the aging body is developing is doing a training and developing a sense of body awareness. Small movements that you sense inside of your body and begin to influence through relaxation techniques or breathing. For instance, releasing your groins. You know, a lot of low back pain is caused by a lot of tension at the base of your spine. Well, if you can begin to sense an imbalance, you can correct it before it puts you out of commission. So, if you've ever been in a yoga class where the teacher says, "All right, now extend your spine or float your kidneys." Well, what does that mean? You know, first you picture it in your mind. Can you really extend your spine? Well, the way to begin is to believe you can, breathe into it, think, visualize expansion, and slowly but surely things, your felt sense of your body increases. And from that place, oh, there are many, many benefits. As I say, I think injury prevention is one of the big ones.
That's so true. Marilyn, we're going to have to go to a quick break, and we're going to continue to talk to Marilyn Preston as soon as we're back.